Hello everyone, welcome to the NRF1 podcast here in Norwich with you on Future Radio, on Acast, on Audioboom, on iTunes, on numerous and many platforms. My name is Michael Bailey. We're here to review the Japanese Grand Prix. A lot happened. A lot happened indeed. But I say that it's myself. It's a minimal crew. It's a pit crew, effectively, of myself and the wonderful Kyle Cumbers. How are you doing, Kyle? Right?
I'm very well. Not too bad at all. Yourself?
Yeah, good. Thank you. You look primed for some cycling.
Yes, I'm trying to, even though the winter is coming, I'm trying to continue with my cycling in and out of work. So, you know, helps the environment and gets me out of traffic. So
you look like a marshal, although you're channeling more lime green than orange, of course, but with the same effect. Absolutely. Right, well, so we might not be quite as long as we normally are with the podcast, but we'll certainly cover all the major points. What a race to talk about. This is episode number 134 of the podcast, round 17 of the Formula One season. Now, Kyle, I remember I asked you this first time out last time. Maybe I'm going to ask you every week. Was this a defining weekend in the Formula One Championship?
I think it was. Because I kind of thought about it today. I thought, if somebody said there's £100 or whatever figure of money, so you have to put it on Rosberg or Hamilton to win, I think before this weekend I'd have always said stick it on Hamilton. I think now, I think it's definitely Rosberg is and I've for the last couple of months said he'll definitely won't win the championship, probably all year I've already said it as well, but I think he's a clear favourite. I mean a lot of people are saying it's all over and next week or in Austin in a couple of weeks time we could be sitting here and there's only an 8-point gap after Rosberg has a engine failure and Hamilton wins. So it's a long way to go, but I'd say give Hamilton about a 25% chance of winning it this year.
Oh, and then this from the guy who knows his betting odds, who does our betting tips and all sorts. I mean, I speak as someone who did very much say that Nico Rosberg will never be a world champion. That was one of my opening predictions. To be honest, a week after that, I knew once I'd said it, it probably meant he was going to win it this year. And every dog has its day, which is kind of a bit like how it feels so far. Niki Lauda has said that only technical issues now can prevent Rosberg from winning the title. He only needs second places for the last four races and it wouldn't matter what Lewis does, which is, that's the point where it really does start hitting home. He's 33 points ahead of Lewis Hamilton, Nico Rosberg now, after winning in Suzuka for the first time, we should add. Interesting that Jenson Button before the race in Japan had said that winning the world title would be Lewis Hamilton's greatest achievement, having been 23 points behind. So I don't quite know what words he would use to describe it now. Toto Wolff, however, he has said that Hamilton needs that kind of enemy to chase down, and he still feels that, a bit like that part of your brain that's saying it's not quite over yet, that, and I've felt this as well, Lewis almost needs things to be really bad before he can start turning them around. But four races and one bad start and you're screwed for an entire race, as we saw at the weekend. That start was bizarre. He sounded so down on the radio afterwards. In many ways, it was a hell of a race to turn it from P8 off a start on P2 into a third on the podium and very close to being second, which I guess maybe is one of the shining lights for him.
Yeah, if you take out the first straight, he had a fantastic race, Hamilton. But I don't, because he was worried because there's a damp strip down the sort of even side of the grid. And apparently I think when he came off the driver's parade, somebody saw him having a word with some marshals, and then a couple of minutes later they were clearing or trying to dry his spots before Ferrari saw and decided that wasn't allowed. So obviously he was worried about it, and I don't know if that got in his head, because he seemed to say, oh, it's my fault, there's no drivers. Normal say, well, it was damp, I had a bad start. But it wasn't just a bad start, was it? It's a dreadful spot. I mean, nearly two cars went into the back of him. So, and as you say on the radio, he went, sorry guys about that. And so you can understand that he's got in his head these bad starts, and you just hope he sort of can clear that, really.
Because it has been a season-long problem, hasn't it? Absolutely. And it brings us brings me on nicely. We haven't got Richard Baxter in today, but he did, as he likes to. He likes to have his say, even if he's not in. So he did send me a message on WhatsApp. Of course, a place famous for Steve Rust having rants, which is great too. But here's what Rich messaged me with. Hamilton had lost the race before it had started due to his mentality. He had an element of doubt in his head due to the damp patch on the track. As soon as that seed is planted, doubt will grow and affect him. Graham Hill, of course, father of Richard's hero, Damon, used to play mind games with his rivals by looking at their tyres, pointing at nothing before grinning and walking off, which is brilliant. This planted doubt in his rivals, which is how he could get one up. It was similar with Hamilton and the damp track. It basically affected his confidence for the start. No one said that officially, of course, but I mean, I have to say that's probably one of the worst starts I've ever seen.
It was dreadful. It was dreadful. But like I said, afterwards, his pace, I mean, at one point he was 24 seconds behind Rosberg. I know Rosberg was sort of probably doing as little as possible. But the gap, Verstappen, pretty much on the same sort of strategy. And so the pace was there. And even on the qualifying, there was nothing between Rosberg and Hamilton, which I've watched both their pole laps and they were pretty much identical through the whole lap. There's one gained a yard here or there, so I don't think people saying all the shenanigans before and afterwards with the media and stuff, but Hamilton's sort of gone through that before, and he's won races when he's been an absolute grump and not spoken to anybody, and he's very good at that, at sort of putting that to one side and just concentrating in the car. So but yeah, I think it's just his starts, and he needs to, in a weird way, gain some confidence from it.
Because we're being denied him and Rosberg actually racing together at the moment. We haven't seen any of that, even though they're in a title duel. Fair play, though. You mentioned that Nico and Lewis's qualifying laps were almost identical. Nico's delivering the goods. I loved his overtake with Kimi the other week, but he's getting it done quite easily, really, and he looks quite calm about it. As I said, he's 33 points ahead now, and dare I say, he's looking like someone who can win the driver's title.
Yeah, I think also this weekend, I think somebody says, if Rosberg wins the championship, does he deserve it? And I think you probably have to say yes for this year, because he obviously had a really strong start, and then Hamilton came back and dominated that period up to the summer break. But since then, he's, and other times he might have just fallen apart after 2 years of losing to Hamilton, but he keeps coming back, seems to get strong, seems to get quicker. And yeah, especially Suzuka, because Suzuka is a driver's track. There's plenty of technical parts, and he matched Hamilton over one lap, which most people say Hamilton's one of the quickest over one lap. So, and he's kind of done that over the 3 years as well. So I think if you looked at a 3 year period and say Hamilton did win it this year, is 3-0 a fair result on Rosberg, the amount of victories he's got? That's probably not. So he probably does deserve, in a weird way, you look back over it, he probably does deserve a championship.
Law of averages is what he's saying. By the law of averages, he deserves something at some point, which is basically where we're at. You touched on it then, Lewis Hamilton's, well, I saw one headline from the Independent, I think, suggesting that Mercedes were worried Lewis was going to have a meltdown, which seemed very dramatic and not based in any way on any quotes or anything on the record, at least. Whether people had said it off the record, I don't know. But we had the distracted press conference, I saw it got called, where basically he'd obviously found some new filters on his Snapchat and was taking pictures of his driver colleagues, which I just thought it is disrespectful to the media, because you know the media don't get many opportunities to speak to the drivers, so they want to take the opportunity, and it's important to them that they do that. So if they're not taking it seriously, that isn't great. And then, of course, Lewis replied by basically saying he wasn't going to do any more of those pre-race ones, I guess. And he wasn't really going to do much of anything because he felt disrespected.
Yeah, because I followed the FIA press conferences on the Thursday. And then they normally have one after the qualifying and then one after the race. I think Toto Wolff speaks, Rosberg speaks, and Hamilton speaks. But I sort of do wonder if it goes back to Malaysia, where we had his comment about someone or something doesn't want me to win, and then within 2 minutes that was in most papers online and BBC saying Hamilton's claiming sabotage.
Yeah.
When,
as we discussed in the last podcast,
he didn't really. So you can maybe he thought, well, whatever I say is becoming such a big deal out of a small thing.
Yeah, and it's a bit like the Wild West in that situation, because I think people, I don't know where that first appeared and who reported it like that, because we as journalists in the media have a responsibility to report what people are saying, and it is frustrating because sometimes they do just say the same old shit. Yeah. Or they are trained to make sure they don't say anything that can be taken anyway, which is a shame, because the best media training would make sure that they do give lines that do what they want to do, and some people are great at playing the media like that. And to be fair, Lewis is normally on it, but I guess this time the media just took something that wasn't there and spun it rather wildly. Bloody media.
I just wonder if he sat there and thought, well, whatever I say, it's going to get taken out of hand. But then it was disrespectful to do what he did. I don't know. To be honest, I don't know how long. I've seen like a video and it's like 45 seconds of him sort of messing around. But I have watched those press conferences, because when they first came on Sky, I was like, oh, this would be quite interesting. And they are dull.
I've sat in them, and they are really shocking. And you'll get some real, because you have the world's media there. Some will have only been to the odd race. Some will be their home race. And you do get really inane questions. You get some really brilliant bits too. But I guess the big question is, do six people need to be in the same press conference? Because that's the bit maybe that's mostly an issue. And they will come round then quickly if you're, you know, Lewis Hamilton, because people want Lewis Hamilton in that press conference to sell the race. But there we go. I guess Lewis won't be in the one for Austin, although he loves Austin, so it'll be fascinating to see how they play that one out. Anyway, ball is most definitely in Nico Rosberg's court to smash home some sort of winner. Right, a couple of plugs. As always, join us on our journey with Patreon. Help us back and support the podcast, and we will deliver you rich Formula One content and a few ideas to change Formula One for the better, which is what we're good at. If you want to get involved, patreon.com/NRF1. That's patreon.com/NRF1. And if you want to follow the podcast, you can do so on Audio Boom. Just go onto Audio Boom and search NRF1. But the best way is to follow us on iTunes and subscribe there. It's nrf1.uk/is on iTunes. For the feed. You are listening to said podcast. We are on Future Radio. We are on Audio Boom. It's time for the NRF1 Pit Stops. And we're going to make a rare stop at the Mercedes garage, because normally we've already dissected most of Mercedes, but I did feel this deserved a little bit on its own, which is the Constructors' Championship for the third season in a row, going to the team from Brackley that Ross Brawn helped save, effectively. They've dominated the sport since it changed to the turbo hybrid era in 2014. That would have been the first year, wouldn't it? And they've delivered. I guess the question is, will they keep delivering as well? Because it's been domination, hasn't it, for 3 years?
Yeah, sort of made a good point, actually, that when you look back and the end of 2008, there may have not been a team there. Mm-hmm. And they've won four championships, including obviously the Brawn Championship since then.
It'd been so long since they'd won a race as well, when they actually became Mercedes, hadn't it? It'd be like the very odd one.
Mm. And I mean, we all kind of knew it was going to happen this year, but you sort of look back at 3 years, it's pretty impressive. I mean, when they are competing against Ferrari and McLaren and Red Bull, and they've dominated, and they seem to get stronger as well. I mean, there's only one race this year that Mercedes haven't won,
yeah,
and the other years it's been three, isn't it? So three, I mean,
Ricciardo. Two races, I think. Oh, gosh, Max, yes. and then Daniel.
Yes, last weekend, yeah. And you had, I think, 3 in 14, 3 in 15. So yeah, well, they keep delivering. I think they'll be strong next year. I think the engine will still be probably the strongest. And also, we saw it was the engine, but the whole car, the chassis, the aerodynamics is all very strong. And we say, Suzuka, you'd think Red Bull would be stronger than they were, but as I said earlier, Hamilton closed down Verstappen pretty quickly. So
we'll come on to that. Yeah, we'll definitely come on to that in Red Bull in a moment. I mean, it is interesting with Red Bull, though. I mean, they dominated for 4 years, didn't they? Mm. And then snap it ends, and now it feels like a complete lifetime ago, doesn't it? And we've had the Mercedes era. And it's interesting whether Mercedes would be better off if the rules weren't really changing for next year, or the fact that they are, because there are some sizable differences to the formula.
That's a good question. Would people catch up as it is the way now, or maybe, I mean, they've got obviously got a big budget and they've got the facilities and obviously they've got the people there, so maybe next year they might be dominant again, and even more dominant compared to Red Bull and stuff. So yeah, actually good point. Ferrari and Red Bull and Honda might actually be better that the regulations stay the way I think, they might catch them up.
We've all got to start again. Well, I tell you what, we will go to Red Bull next, shall we? We've got to touch on the fact that Max Verstappen finished second again, four places ahead of Daniel Ricciardo, who got a little bit stuck in the start, really, and not helped out by several things. Max's driving to defend against Lewis went right to the wire, Lewis eventually going off track, which is effectively what handed Max second place nice and securely. And there was a protest, wasn't there, that was being made, and then it got withdrawn. We don't know if it was Mercedes or Lewis who withdrew it. We don't know who the idiot was who said there was a protest in the first place. Maybe it was Lewis. Who knows with the weekend he had. What did you make of all that? Was that worthy of a protest or all a bit of handbags?
No, I think as Max's other moves, I think it was on the limit. But I think Charlie Whiting spoke to him afterwards to sort of say, you know, probably that's as far as you can go defensively. But you want hard racing. I think there's Hamilton's probably done it before himself, and he said afterwards that's the way it goes. It's a shame there wasn't a few more laps. And that might have got interesting.
Yeah.
And Verstappen will keep doing it as long as he gets away with it and keeps defending. I mean, one day somebody might go, well, now I'm gonna stick on the inside and have a big collision, he might think twice about it. But yeah, I think it's fair enough. You can't police it too much. And sort of at the time, I thought, ooh, that was a bit risky. But I sort of looked back on it today, and I thought, well, that's just about fair enough.
I wouldn't want him to change really at the moment, to be honest. And if someone sticks one up the outside and they clash, we'd probably quite enjoy it. Now, you mentioned earlier you're a bit disappointed, or that Red Bull didn't really live up to what people were hoping they would. Deliver, but then were they not maybe more competitive at a power circuit than they would have managed in the few years? It sort of emphasised maybe that Max could be up there and challenging, and he still split the Mercedes in the end.
Yes, I mean, you look at he finished 5 seconds behind Rosberg, which is pretty impressive. But I was also just expecting a bit more. Really, I thought Suzuka would suit them more, but maybe power is more. It's quite important there, and you didn't really realise it, but yeah, and they still sort of beat Ferrari as well, so yeah, I probably was being a little bit harsh, but I think
that's alright. I wasn't telling you off, Carl. I wasn't telling you off, but no.
I think Ricciardo was a bit disappointing, but I did hear that he had a lack of power issues on the Saturday, so I don't know if that carried forward to the Sunday, but I think maybe they were expecting a bit more themselves. I don't know.
Maybe it was Max Verstappen calling Daniel Ricciardo the team's number two driver before the race with a bit of Aussie sledging. Oh, good news, by the way. The Budgie Smuggling 9 are out of prison and very apologetic for not respecting Malaysian culture and by stripping down to their keks. So fair enough, you know. I think everyone's learned a lesson there. Don't buy Malaysian flags, budgie smugglers. Right. So that's Red Bull sorted. And I guess another team who didn't really deliver the power they were hoping for was McLaren. Fernando Alonso was like, where did that happen and what went wrong there? Because I think he was, and they would have been expecting a bit more, especially as it was their home race for Honda, of course.
Yes, at the Honda, it was built, the Honda test track. It was a shocking weekend, it really was. I mean, he had the engine penalty in Malaysia, or the new engine for this weekend. I mean, even at the time he said there's no more power, it's just more reliability.
Oh yeah.
But I mean, Alonso finished 16th and Button was 18th. I mean, that's just poor. You think the aerodynamics should benefit them a little bit more, and especially out of the last few weeks you thought, oh, maybe they're making progress. But it was a shocker, really.
It's going to be fascinating how they get on next year, because it does seem to be so hit and miss. It's going to be really interesting. Ferrari, two things have come up, and we've maybe spoken quite a lot about Sebastian Vettel in recent weeks, but I thought it was interesting Martin Brundle openly said, look, it looks like he's lost his mojo at the moment, and that's going to be a bit of an issue going forward. There is, of course, the Maurizio Arrivabene's interview where he effectively said Sebastian Vettel's got to earn his next contract. He's out of contract to the end of 2017. He's 30 next year as well. This isn't the young pup who broke all those records so long ago. And then we've got Kimi Raikkonen actually driving really well. I mean, I don't think any of us saw that one coming. So they seem they are in a weird position at the moment, aren't they, Ferrari?
Yeah, I mean, so on right, he's probably outperformed. Yeah. Vettel since summer break, probably.
Yeah.
He's a bit unlucky with his gearbox penalty. It would be interesting to see how well he would have done on the Sunday. But, yeah, I think Vettel's had a really... sort of look back, he's had a poor year, I think, after last week's race as well. Sort of with Ben, I think his comments, he's got to earn a contract, which I suppose technically is true. He has two performances, but I think... people sort of saying maybe he's Arrivabene was a bit worried that Vettel was getting too involved with other things and trying to get involved in more factory stuff than he should be. But if that's what Vettel done at Red Bull and that's a success, then why not? And if you look on it, who would you rather keep, Arrivabene or Vettel? You probably would be Vettel, because he's got four championships behind him, and Arrivabene, we all look back on last year and say, oh, he came in and they done quite well, but they've gone backwards since then. Did he just come in at a good time, and since he's taken over, they've gone backwards, and James Allison's left, which I think is a bad move. And Arrivabene seems to be the one. I mean, some of these antics on the pit wall, it was all quite good at the start. Oh, shows his passion, but sometimes you want a boss just to be a bit more chilled and just like the first corners and stuff. He's smacking the desk and stuff. You're like, you need a bit more of a calming influence on the pit wall than that.
It's passion, Kyle. It's passion. It's good old Italian passion. It's interesting. I mean, Vettel does have those titles behind him. I suppose it depends if he's still got that hunger behind that as well. Otherwise, it's pointless.
Yeah, just the blue flags, constantly blue flags. I've seen every lap at one point, he's moaning about blue flags, and he has done all season. I mean, you understand at this point, because he's probably trying to get a message across to Charlie Whiting, but surely all the time is distracting you from doing your job. But
depends if he's just poodling around, doesn't it? Poodling around. Fascinating what happens with Ferrari, and I guess the changes in the sport, let's not underplay those. They're going to have an impact on where Ferrari probably stands in terms of Formula One's hierarchy as well. So it's very interesting times down at the old prancing horse at Maranello. A couple of the other... just two other teams really wanted to touch on. Force India, we had some great overtakes from Nico Hosberg and Sergio Perez. Both of them were on Williams cars, as far as I could tell. And there's a suggestion today, actually, that came forward that Nico Hülkenberg is likely to be signed up by Renault, possibly for next year. Obviously, Perez is definitely secured at Force India. And then Williams, I mean, they are returning from whence they came, which was the abysmal team that was competing about 4 years ago. What is happening there?
Yeah, I mean, no cars got through to Q3. Both Haas's got through.
Get that in, Kyle. Well done.
So well done to the Haas team.
Well done to the Haas team on behalf of the NRF1 podcast.
But which I did find quite funny. Did Massa kind of say, oh, we would have got through to Q3 if it wasn't for Haas's performance? Well, yeah.
if there weren't 10 cars faster than us, we probably would have got into Q3.
Other teams are allowed to do quite well at certain tracks. But they are behind Force India on pace. You think Force India going to get fourth place? You've probably got the better driver lineup out of the two. And it's not... you always kind of thought, well, even when Williams are doing well, like finishing third and second in the Constructors' Championship, you kind of outperforming. I mean, their budget probably is fifth place, but they've probably got a bigger budget than Force India, the same engine package for Mercedes. So they should be doing better than Force India. So they do finish behind them. It'll be a really poor season. Where you kind of thought they were moving forward, they're kind of going backwards at the moment.
It's like they're losing performance on the engine. A lot of the advantage they had was clearly from having a Mercedes engine compared to others, and the aerodynamics of the car are not enough to sustain it, sadly. Alas, interesting times at Williams. Felipe Massa, so I think he's just imagining his beach and his retirement cocktails. Right, well, that's that then. This is the NRF1 podcast on Audio Boom on Future Radio. Time for some of the weekends. I don't think these will take long, but Max Verstappen got the official driver of the weekend. In terms of the Rodolfo Gonzalez driver of the weekend, Carl, who would you give that to?
Funny, I have to give it to Rosberg. Oof. Yes, like I said earlier, for his performance in qualifying, and he probably deserves a Rodolfo Gonzalez award. He probably hasn't got many over the last few years.
True.
So he probably deserves one.
It's
so
rare. It's rare that he would get one. I mean, I would probably give it to Lewis Hamilton because the whole weekend seemed to be about him. not necessarily that he was the best driver, just that he literally was the driver of the weekend. Team, Mercedes for winning the Constructors' Championship again. Not Ferrari, obviously. But they did sort of botch up a few strategy calls as well, possibly with Vettel. Was that a suggestion?
Yeah, for the, they didn't have a great weekend. Probably you have to give it Mercedes and Force India, which we spoke about a few minutes ago.
How about Pastor of the weekend? I mean, Williams, I've got down here, they'd be a definite candidate. With anyone else who stood out as atrocious?
I thought Carlos Sainz, we were sort of raved about him this year, and I just thought he was slower than Kvyat. To some of his moves when he's defending, he was sort of chopping across the line and then losing two positions at one go, and he just had a poor weekend. He's on the radio moaning about this and that, and he had a poor one. So, Carlos Sainz.
I love how this is a sport obviously heightened by all kinds of technology, yet if a driver has a bad weekend, we can all see it. It's brilliant. And your highlight, mine, Lewis Hamilton's start. I mean, I know it's not a highlight, but you when you sit and watch something in a race and you're like, oh my God, that is defining what we are watching there. You know, for all his crap and gimmicks and what have you around the race weekend, to get out for the start and do that, you're like, holy shit. What are you up to, Lewis? But there we go.
Yeah, I think my highlight is probably Hamilton's attempt to overtake Verstappen, just the fact that there's such a long build-up. You kind of saw it, you thought, what's going to happen? He's gradually getting closer and closer and just expecting it to happen. And it was, it was quite exciting, the move, because he defended and he ran wide. And that's what I thought. You don't always... Good moves and stuff don't always need to be overtakes, and good bits of racing don't always need to be overtakes. It's... Defending is an art, and how you go about it. And there's two drivers, really good bit of skill, because Hamilton built up from halfway around the lap. And I just thought, that was a good bit of top drivers at the best.
Good racing. And there you heard it there, defending an art form from Max Verstappen. So less of the criticism. Right, we'll wrap it up then. I'll just get the plugs in. The website, of course, nrf1.uk for blogs, tips and more. Twitter and Facebook handles if you want to visit our pages and see what we're up to. As always, both of them are at the NRF1. And you can get in contact with us too with an email to nrf1podcast@gmail.com. We'll be back with a full roundup of the Prediction League and where we're at, along with our preview of the USA Grand Prix in Austin, Texas, which is always an absolute cracker. And we'll have all the latest Formula One news over the next few days too. But Kyle, thank you so much for doing the job of about four people today. I just did my normal job. Thanks to everyone out there for listening. We always appreciate it. And we will be back in about a week's time, looking ahead to Austin, Texas. Until then, have fun. Good night.